And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. You're very welcome along to another week of the 9 till noon show as the clock just turns 5 minutes past nine on this Monday, the 19th of February, 2024. How are you all keeping? What happened at your weekend? If you want to share with us, please do. Maybe it's some good news, an act of kindness, whatever it might be. Or maybe there's an issue that's propped up that you need our help and support with. Well, get in touch with us. The lines are open for you right now, of course, on 086 60 25000. That's the WhatsApp and text number. And you can also send your WhatsApp voice notes to that. If you want to give us a call, we've got Caroline, as always, producing the programme, assisted by Shannon, both taking your calls on 07491 25000, and email comments at highlandradio.com, and you can contact us on our social media as well, as many of you do. And if you want to watch the programme, go to YouTube, the YouTube app on your TV, your smart TV or Fire Stick, and you can watch us there, and we're across your mobile devices on that app and on Facebook as well. Highland Hub, Highland News and Sport. Coming up later on after 11 o'clock, well, there's lots coming up on the show. Brendan Devaney's going to be on with us. He's looking forward to the DL debate, reflecting on the weekend's sporting action. Another great performance from the Donegal seniors. Well, when I say a great performance, a good second half, certainly first half, not so much. But anyway, we'll be talking through that and the rest of the GEA results with Brendan. And we're also going to be joined by a panel to discuss the upcoming referendums. You would know that we're going to the polls, or being asked to go to the polls on March 8th, International Women's Day. There are two referendums, and we have four people with different views on which way they might vote, and I suppose trying to influence others as well. So that's coming up after 11. They're complex referendums, there's no doubt about it, because it's not just the wordings of the referendum, but lots of people have different views as to what might happen if the referendums are passed or not passed. And that's where the sort of interpretation and the could be comes into it, or it could open the door for this, or it could open the door for that. And it's going to be difficult, really, I think. I think it's going to come down to really who you trust to some extent as well. But anyway, we're going to debate that after 11. If you have any questions or comments in relation to those referendums, get them into us right now on the numbers I mentioned just a few moments ago. So hopefully we'll come out of that with a little bit more clarity on what way we're thinking and what have you. Every day for me too is a learning day on that issue, so I'm looking forward to it, to sit in on it, of course, but just to hear what the contributors have to say. We've got a great panel, actually, of voices you're familiar with to discuss that. So stay tuned for that. That's coming up after 11 o'clock. Let's have a quick look at what's in and on the front of the papers this morning. The Donegal News, a leading Donegal cancer campaigner, has warned that despite the high numbers of patients receiving treatment at a cross-border centre, many are still forced to travel further afield. Chair of Donegal Action for Cancer Care, Betty Holmes, said laurels cannot be rested upon when it comes to providing cancer treatment. Figures released to the Donegal News through the Freedom of Information Act reveal 1,353 Donegal patients have been treated at the Northwest Cancer Centre in Artnagelvin Hospital in Derry since 2017. The figures were highest last year when 268 Donegal patients received cancer treatment at NWCC. The Derry News this morning. And this is the story I wanted to discuss from this paper. It is from Catherine McGinty. Signs at Greenan of Allia deterring people from visiting the iconic Inishowen Monument have been removed. The Office of Public Works signs at the Fort car park were giving visitors the mistaken impression Greenan of Allia was closed when it was actually open. Dozens of disappointed Derry visitors found themselves repeatedly unable to gain access to the Ring Fort over Christmas and New Year. Such was the visitor and community frustration with the situation. An online petition started recently by local historian Bettina Link to restore open access to Greenan of Allia was signed by more than 1,500 people. But the signs have been removed. Opening hours there have been extended. On to the Irish Times now, and a legal analysis carried out by the Free Legal Advice Centre concerning next month's referendum proposals has led to its supporting the proposed family amendment to the Constitution, but not the ineffective, as they describe it, and implicitly sexist amendment on carers. The Care Amendment is unlikely to provide carers, people with disabilities or older people, with new enforceable rights or improved services from the state, Flack said. The proposal gives constitutional expression to harmful stereotypes in care provision and potentially compromises the rights of people with disabilities. While Flack has said it will not be participating in the referendum campaign, the position adopted by the respected independent human rights and equality body is significant, and a significant contribution to the debate. On to the Irish Independent now. And what do you think about this? What I mean, listen, a lot of people are paying mortgages late into their life. But a new lender is to issue mortgages that people can pay off until they are 80. I mean, would you take on a 40-year mortgage if you were 40, or a 60-year mortgage if you were 20? That's not realistic. You know, probably a 50-year mortgage if you were 30. But anyway, new lender MoCo is prepared to issue mortgages that people can pay off until the age of 80. Most lenders have credit policies that mean they want the mortgage paid off by the time the homeowner reaches the age of 70. MoCo, which is owned by Australian bank BAWAG, is expected to add some much-needed competition in the home loans market here, which is dominated by AIB and Bank of Ireland. It insisted it is acting prudently in offering mortgages to older homeowners. Last month, it launched its first home loans in this market, including a five-year fixed rate starting from 4.5%, which is lower than the main banks. But its move to issue lending criteria to brokers that permits mortgage terms that will mean some borrowers still paying off the loan up to the age of 80 has raised eyebrows. Its credit policy states max term of up to 35 years, max term to applicants aged 80. So a 45-year-old, theoretically, if I got my maths correct, yes, a 45-year-old could take out a 35-year mortgage paying it until the age of 80. Okay, maybe it's more inclusive. Maybe it's a good thing. Will they do a lot of trade? Perhaps. The Irish Daily Mail, the media minister is to haul RTE Director General Kevin Backhurst and Board Chair Shinini Rakhlia before her this morning to insist full transparency around Golden Handshake exit payments is vital to rebuild trust and secure future funding for the national broadcaster. It's understood Catherine Martin will urge the pair to explore options for maximum disclosure at the earliest opportunity and make clear that reform of the funding model is linked with reform of RTE. Simon Coveney, the Enterprise Minister, he does not know how much his brother was paid to leave RTE after the latter spearheaded the multi-million euro flop, Late Late Show, the musical. Now, the problem for Kevin Backhurst is that some of these deals where confidentiality was afforded were agreed whilst he was in situ as the DG, right? So does that point to change? You know what I mean? This is taxpayers' money. Why should some of these people be able to leave with a year's salary or 2 years' salary or whatever the package might be, and it to be a secret? And that secrecy was agreed by the new Director General, Kevin Backhurst, and it's a political problem for the government, hence him coming before the media minister. On to the Irish Sun, and a bill of nearly €1,500. When was the last time you spent €1,500 in a restaurant or a bistro, I wonder? I would say there's very few people listening to this show that have ever racked up a bill of €1,500. Well, a bill of nearly €1,500 was racked up at Jamie Oliver's Bistro. It was among items paid for on an Oireachtas credit card over the past year. An invoice for €17,000 to the Posh K Club was also among the expenditures. There was also a €1,000 bill for a working dinner at a boutique lounge, and nearly €11,500 spent on accommodation at the capital's Conrad Hotel. The Oireachtas currently has four credit cards in operation. The largest bill incurred was €17,284 spent at the K Club in County Kildare, or the Kildare Hotel and Country, as it is listed in the statements. Officials said this was for a meeting of the British Irish Parliamentary Assembly in December and included representatives from Ireland, the UK and its Ireland dependencies. €1,423 charge at Dublin's Checker Lane by Jamie Oliver's restaurant last February for a dinner to mark a visit by the Speaker of the Republic of Moldova. Okay, that's interesting. €1,500 wining and dining the Speaker of the Republic of Moldova, and that went on a Oireachtas credit card. I'm not sure if that's regular spending or if that's something that might get the ire of the public, who's to say? Interesting story from the Irish Daily Mirror. If you were watching the Late Late Show on Friday, you would have seen a group of individuals performing in honour of the late singer Sinead O'Connor. Well, RTE asked musicians not to wear pro-Palestinian clothing and accessories during a performance on The Late Late Show. The Irish Women in Harmony group performed a tribute to Sinead O'Connor on Friday night's edition. However, Irish Artist for Palestine said prior to the performance, a group member was asked to change a T-shirt which featured the word Gaza and a love heart, while others were asked to remove badges expressing support for Palestinians, which I find quite interesting because the RTE actually did a fundraiser for Ukraine. The Late Late Show, if I'm not mistaken, they actually did a fundraiser for Ukraine when Ryan Tuberty was the host. If I'm not mistaken as well, the ambassador from Israel to Ireland appeared on the show, or has appeared on RTE at the very least, wearing pro-Israeli badges and what have you. So there is precedent here from Israel, a representative from Israel being able to express themselves through badges and what have you, and an actual fundraiser for Ukraine. So how is the policy formed there where you go, right, well, we can do a fundraiser for Ukraine, but we can't wear a T-shirt that supports Gaza? It really is quite one I can't really quite get my head around. RTE said contributors are asked not to wear clothing related to one particular point of view as part of its impartiality guidelines. A spokesperson said all RTE content follows clear guidelines in regard to impartiality. Now, I'm not saying, you know, there are a lot of people that feel there's no impartiality in the Russia-Ukraine situation, but there are others that would argue that, of course, there has to be. But it seems a bit of a, I don't know. Don't know what to make of that. What do you think? 086 60 25,000. And lastly, good news from the BAFTAs last night for Ireland. Cillian Murphy has become the first Irish-born performer, and he's very proud to be Irish-born as well. He's the first Irish-born performer to win a BAFTA award for Best Actor. The Cork native bagged the BAFTA for Best Actor in a leading role for his performance in Oppenheimer, making him the first Irish actor to get the prize. Cillian's performance as J. Robert Oppenheimer, one of the leading men responsible for inventing the atomic bomb, nabbed the prestigious award, his first BAFTA win. There was also nominations too for Barry Keoghan and Paul Mescal. They missed out, I believe. But anyway, Oppenheimer, a good film. If you sort of watch it in the context that there's kind of like three timelines going at the same time. It's less confusing when you view it like that. All right, okay, that was a run through the papers this morning. How are you all doing? Stay in touch, stay in contact, keep us busy. 086 60 25,000, that's the WhatsApp and text number, or call 074 91 25,000. It is Monday's 9 till noon show. First guests on the way. Now, farmers are going to target county council meetings around the country in the next phase of a campaign against rising costs and increased regulation. The message for politicians, we're told, is that enough is enough. Frank Brady is regional chair of the IFA and joins us on the programme now. Good morning to you, Frank. Thanks for your time. Sorry, Frank, are you there? No, I don't seem to have Frank there, unfortunately. Anyway, we'll get Frank for you in a moment. 086 60 25,000, by the way, if you want to have a say on that, whether or not you back the farmers in their protests. 086 60 25,000, or give us a call on 074 91 25,000. And just an opportunity as we reconnect to remind you that a little later on we are going to be debating the upcoming referendums on carers and what have you. I'll give you the proper wording. I don't want to do it off the top of my head for fear of it's misleading, but we are being asked to vote on March the 8th. I wonder, well, how many of you actually will take the time to vote? Do you believe it's something that moves you or bothers you? I wonder, actually, in relation to that, because we don't really hear from those that aren't really that bothered, if you know what I mean, that maybe even turn the news over when this issue comes up, that they feel it doesn't affect them. I'd say there's a lot of people out there along those lines. Caroline, can I have that stuff from the end of the week, just if you don't mind, because it gave me an opportunity to catch up on that. Yeah, I just, you know, those that are sort of passive about the whole situation, do we really get to hear from them? I'm not really sure. Right, some comments here. I was wondering if you could highlight something for me. It's with regards to do with women. I don't know if it's rats or mice. Oh, is it? Shall I come back to that then? Because that's quite a long message. All right, I'll come back to that one. That's from a listener. Frank, are you there? Frank Brady, are you there?
Greg, how are you this morning?
I am doing fantastic, Frank. Okay, so when we say enough is enough, when farmers say enough is enough, what do they mean?
I mean that we're tired by bureaucrats. Sorry, I have a cold.
That's okay, take your time.
We're tied by bureaucrats who are trying to save the world and blame the farmers for everything. They'll take the beef in from with the Mercer deals. They'll not pay us our payments in time. And if we're late or we make one mistake, we're fined, we're closed down, and we're just generally getting tired of it. We want to be treated as equals, and we want to be treated for what we do, produce really good food in a very good carbon-friendly place.
And this is not just Ireland. We're seeing a movement right across Europe, and I think particularly in France, the farmers are really ramping up their game in that regard. So it's not a uniquely Irish situation then. What's happening across Europe that has farmers so angry? Is it what you've said? Is it deals that are being signed, proposals that are being made, or is it being used as what some might see as the scapegoat for the whole climate crisis conversation?
I would say it's a combination of all three, Greg. Definitely would say it's a combination. In France and Germany, it was the diesel and taking the VAT off it, or putting the VAT on it. And that was the torch that lit the fire. Here, it's always been late with our payments, always feeling like secondhand, trying natural taking our land away from us, wetting one field between two good farmers and not telling us where the extra water is going to go. There's a lots of little things there, special areas of conservation. We have the hen harrier, where they paid farmer for 5 years to look after them, which seems to have been a bit of a failure. And then after 5 years, you continue doing what they want you to do, but they're not going to give you any expense that it incurs. So there's lots of little things that we're doing. I'd say it's a setup of supermarkets not giving us a margin, not getting a fair price, having to live like this. I think if we all had a margin and we're all well properly paid, I think there'd be a lot less people wouldn't be as unhappy as they are.
I mean, some would feel it's almost like being seen as a sunset sector. In other words, it's on its last legs. Is there a sense that this is the beginning of the last stand to protect farming and its future and farming families and their sons and daughters who may have an interest in farming? Does it feel like that we're at the tipping point now? It's now or never?
Craig, it's the look at the average age of farmers. A few years ago, it's 57 years of age. It's now 62. I'm lucky I have a son that's come into my business. I don't think he's lucky because it's too hard a life. Like, what's happening here? Are we going back to the landlord system, which is not what we want, where the big are getting much bigger and the small are leaving because their children don't want to go? Why are farmers' children the best educated? Because they don't want them going back to doing what they did, so that we give them the best education we can give them. So there is a need there for make sure that if somebody's going farming, that there's a proper income. And they'll do the hours, they'll do everything else, but they do need to be rewarded for the work. And we do produce carbon-friendly food. We're the best producer of milk in Europe, and we're the fifth best for beef. Nobody can produce it like we do, and less rewards for it. We don't want a big margin, but we just want to be rewarded. And the government has to stand up. They brought in a regulator there. Has she any real powers at the end of the day? Our acres payments, all our payments were delayed. If we told the civil servants they're not going to get paid until after Christmas. Last September, we generally got our payments when kids are going back to school. Farmers didn't have the money to pay for their children's education because everything was put back because of IT systems, because of everything. And as Francie O'Gorman says, enough is enough.
This is not a question coming from a point of view from me, though, but you're talking about payments, and it's not necessarily payments from for producing or wages. It's actually payments and supports from the government, from the EU.
Yeah.
In reality, yeah. If farming had to stand on its own two feet, could it survive Is it an industry worth saving? Because it really is only kept going, is it not, as it is, because farmers are really, you know, they're not making money off what they're doing. They're keeping their head above water by being supported.
Yes, I agree with all of those things. But Greg, did you have a breakfast this morning?
Oh, no, listen, you don't have to convince me, but I have to ask the questions.
I know, but I'm not convinced of your listeners.
Not this morning, yeah, not this morning.
Oh, Jesus, Greg, you should always. The most important meal of the day.
You just asked the wrong person that question. But I had breakfast yesterday morning, Frank. I had breakfast yesterday.
You had dinner last night.
I did.
You had dinner last night. And all of those ingredients hopefully came from Ireland.
Yes.
And if we are not producing it, we have to go to Brazil, we have to go to Argentina, where there's massive big farmers, and they'll continue to cut down the rainforest. Mm-hmm. Then we have the carbon footprint. It's like the almond milk. People say, oh, the almond milk is great. They don't realise that after the almonds are cut down, that the ground has to be rested for 2 to 3 years because of all the nutrients it takes out, plus the carbon footprint that it takes to bring it from there to here. So the most curious thing that we can do is produce food. There's an issue now with women, people that are, ladies that are having babies that are vegetarians. There's a little bit of rickets coming in on the babies because of the diet isn't balanced. So we do need farmers to produce a balanced diet, to produce a good diet and a wholesome diet. Mm-hmm. And whether we like it or not, we need to support our farmers, because the housewife or the house husband or the consumer, in a better word, is getting cheap food, which is supported by the government. If we didn't, or Europe, if we didn't have that cheap food, the consumer would have to pay an awful lot more. And that is how they do it. That's how CAP came in the beginning, was to make sure that food was safe. And it was there after World War II. That's why CAP was so important. And now they're taking it away gradually. And there will be an issue, if we're not careful, on food. There will be a shortage of food. And then where do we go? And we need family farms to produce food, because they're the most efficient people at doing it, because a farmer with enough just to look after himself looks after his animals much better than a big multinational that has thousands of them.
Now,
we'd know all our animals. Yep. Every farmer that I know would nearly know all their animals individually.
Frank, how much of this, because obviously there's an EU-wide element to this, how much of this is the actual playing field for farmers across Europe? And in terms of what Irish farmers are going through, how much of it is about our deals and what we get from Europe, or what rules and regulations we have to follow? Like, in other words, could an awful lot of the Irish farming issues be resolved with a better deal from Europe? Are Irish farmers in certain ways more disadvantaged than their counterparts in France, Spain, Portugal, etc.?
I would say, if you speak to any farmer in any of those countries, they will think they're probably disadvantaged more than any other farmer. But I suppose if we look down seriously and look at it all, we're all seriously disadvantaged because of the rules and regulations that are being put in place by people that don't even know what they're doing. And that is the issue here. Why are they doing this? Mm-hmm. Why are they not willing to support us and let us produce food and let us get a proper price for it?
Right. As we're speaking, those watching the show are observing the last protest, whereby it wasn't disruptive. It was in solidarity with farmers across Europe. The next stage of that, as we've mentioned right at the beginning of this, is to protest at Donegal County Council meeting on Wednesday. So what form will that take on Wednesday around Lifford, Frank?
Well, what we did in Longford, and we were the first crowd to, as regional chairman, I was in Longford. What we did in Longford was we went in and we met the council, and we were brought into the chamber, myself and John Sheridan, who's chairman of Longford. And we sat down and we told them our issues, and we looked for their support, because they'll want our support in a couple of months' time when they're going for election. So we looked for their support to help us, that the red tape is cut, that the regulator has real teeth, that the schemes that they bring in are to help us rather than hinder us. Mm-hmm. And we're going to do the same with the Donegal County Councillors. That basically, enough is enough. Work with us rather than work against us. And if you work with us, we'll work with you.
Yeah, because you know, it's like fishing as well. And we saw quite a a passionate exchange in Killybegs there recently. And I'm on about from speaking to people within the industry, so I don't know enough to express an opinion myself, but speaking to people that I trust and know, is where is the next generation of fishers? Where is the next generation of farmers? You know, we are, I think, there's a really quite a small window here to, as some would say, turn it around, that there is a future for those industries, because they could just naturally die out. It'll be like cash or something along those lines. You know, where are the next crop of farmers and fishers going to come from? And there's no industry without them, because no harm to the likes of yourself, Frank, or if it were me, we're not going to be around forever.
No, unfortunately, we're not going to be around forever. I found that out this morning. We're not going to be around forever, because it's just... and what I made the point earlier is that what's going to happen is the landlord system that we fought hundreds of years to get away from will take over, because the small will be taken over and the big will get bigger. And then he'll have to go and get staff in from Romania or Mexico or Philippines or wherever. And Ireland will lose its heritage of small family farms. The local GAA team will lose. The local churches will lose. Everybody loses if the family farm goes down the drain. Okay. And that's why it's very important that we have to keep the family farm viable, and we have to look after it, because if we look after the family farm, we'll get the food we want. We know it's safe. It can't be produced any safer than what we produce in Ireland. And we know we have a rural community, which is what everybody wants.
All right, Frank. I do note your passing comment. Hope everything's all right with you and those close to you. But thank you very much for joining us this morning. I do appreciate it.
Okay.
Thanks
very much, Greg.
All right, bye-bye, Frank. Frank Brady there, Regional Chair of the IFA. They're going up on Wednesday, and I'm sure they'll get a good hearing from the local public representatives, of course. Any views on any of that conversation, 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000, or give us a call on 074 91 25000. Hi, Greg. I was just wondering if you know anything about the man who stands outside a shop looking for spare change. He was at this shop again yesterday evening, and I feel totally freaked out by him, as he stands so close to the door frame so that staff do not see him. And even though I know he's there, I get a fright and bang my trolley into the door. He is obviously making a pretty penny when he continues to do this, but I feel it's unfair, as people who cannot afford to give money may be doing so. Now, that is, I'm not sure what area that's in. I know the type of shop, I know the name of the shop. Is it a ploy to sort of get the trolley money, I wonder? That you might hand over the €1 or €2, dependent on what it might be. I don't know. But this person finds it quite intimidating, this person standing so close to this shop. I suspect it may well be in Letterkenny. I did read towards the end of last week that the housing minister confirmed he expects Sligo to be included in the state's MICA and pyrite redress scheme, as it was referred to by a media outlet down the country. Dara O'Brien indicated the county would be high on the priority list. Hundreds of homes in Sligo are thought to be affected by the issue, and it's sort of lauded as, wow, this is great news. Sligo is now going to be added to this. But for those who are already on this scheme in Donegal, the reality is that for many, it just simply is not working, or it's slow, or it's faulty. That's the feedback we're getting anyway. Gareth joins us on the programme now. Hi, Gareth.
Morning, Greg. How's the form?
I'm doing all right, Gareth, and I hope you and yours are okay as well. You are... well, tell us your experience of the scheme so far and the situation you find yourself in.
Well, the current situation we're in, Greg, is we are due to move out of our house, hopefully in the next week and a half. Where our plan is that the demo and rebuilds will hopefully start sometime in March. So up to this point, we have had to lay quite a few quid out of our own pocket that we have no chance of getting back as yet, because we have no access to the portal. We have contacted the council about this, and we have been told that it's currently not open. They don't know when it's going to reopen, which leaves us no chance of getting any of this money we've spent so far. And we have spent close to about €8,500.
Mm. And there's no real opportunity for you to get this back then, so because you can't engage with the system to lodge your lodge your documentation. Is that the situation?
Yeah. So currently, there's no we have no chance of getting this money back currently. And like I say, we haven't even moved out of our house yet. We have had to make our own plans for storage. There's no storage space available anywhere in Letterkenny. So we had to go and we had to buy a shed. We haven't got space on our land. We live in an estate in Remelton. We haven't got space on our land to put in a big storage container. So we had to go and buy a shed. We had to clear an area in the garden. We had to move our oil tank, which consequently has left us with no heating for the last 2 weeks. We had to move our oil tank. We put the shed in. We filled the shed with all the stuff from the house. We've been told that this may not fall under applicable costs in the scheme. The scheme does provide €5,000 for storage, but we have been told that this may not qualify as an applicable cost. So we could be left with that bill ourselves.
You made the point, or your partner made the point, that, you know, if revenue needed to get money in, it'd be all be sorted really, really quickly. Why can't they put the same sort of emphasis into paying the money out?
It would be nice, yeah. It would be nice if anybody would come and talk to us rather than just, you know, I don't want to name names, Greg, but you know the people that are going to national media and they're telling a certain story. Mm. And the national media seems to be quite happy to carry this story when anybody on the ground here in Donegal knows it's anything but. That, you know, that RTE have been told, oh, people are able to fully rebuild their houses within the cost of the scheme, which is absolute horse manure. It's rubbish. But it's one of many problems we are facing. Now, as I've told everybody that I speak to recently, I consider us lucky. If the worst thing that's going to happen to us, that we're going to have to come up with 30 or 40 or 50,000 to get through this, I don't see that as a huge problem because it's only money.
Yeah.
If this was going to start affecting us physically or mentally, which it is with so many people in this county, I would consider that a much bigger problem.
Can we talk a little bit about the physical and emotional impact of trying to work through the scheme even, let alone how it feels when you find out that you have it, that you're on that list, that you sort of, the little bit of denial about settling cracks or whatever, that a lot of people
were in denial for a while.
when the reality sets in and you realise that this, you've got this journey ahead of you, and then when you do try and engage with this scheme that you're told is great and it's a good scheme, but at every turn it feels like it's not. It is tough. We're only human, aren't we? It's tough to deal with all of that emotion. And it does impact then on your emotional and physical health.
Yeah, and look, Greg, like anybody, you know, we've had our ups and downs in life, but you get to a point where you feel like you're just banging your head off a brick wall. Pardon the pun, but you get the feeling like you're absolutely getting nowhere. Yeah. And our public representatives stand up and they tell everybody what a great job they're doing and how much they're helping, and they're not. They're just not, Greg. We're in a desperate situation.
But Gareth, just on that, you see, and maybe this is the reason they are not, because if you speak privately to some, they do believe it is a good scheme, and encourage people to get on and say it is a scheme, it's working, it's got some teething problems, but this is a good scheme. That is the view of potentially some of the people that you're talking of. If that's what they believe, like, you know. So maybe that's why.
Well, Greg, you know what?
Yeah.
You let any one of them come on the radio with anybody from Engineers Ireland and have that conversation, Greg.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's a worthwhile move for it. In terms of, you talked of a shortfall, this is not going to be a 100% scheme for you and your family, Gareth. I think you've kind of accepted that. Is that the case, or?
Oh, yeah. We are fully aware of that. And I mean, like, We've pretty much exhausted all the money we have so far. Mm. We've a few quid left, and even with the fact that the portal isn't currently open, we have been advised that we like I said, we're moving out in a week and a half. We have been advised, and we've already paid a deposit and March's rent for the place we're moving into. We've been advised that we should prepare to pay April's rent because it could be sometime in April before this is this portal is reopened.
Mm-hmm. Right, okay. And just in terms of how, Gareth, you can progress with this build, I mean, obviously notwithstanding the issues that you've talked about, you're moving out. If you've got a timescale for demolition and rebuild, and how does it work with a contractor in terms of sort of, you know, the payments for them and what have you? If any of that leaks into your private information, ignore the question, Gareth. That's not what I'm not trying to ask your ins and outs of your finances, but I'm just curious in your experience so far of the scheme.
Yeah, well, what I have heard now, and I must say just anecdotally from talking to people, is that there are contractors that are taking on jobs and are commencing work, and then due to the limitations of the scheme are having to stop because they're not getting the money they need. Mm-hmm. Because not everybody has, you know, thousands of euros sitting about to facilitate this kind of thing.
Yeah, I don't know anyone that has it. But that's just, you find yourself in your sort of similar situation with your friends group and family group, don't you? Okay, Gareth, we're going to make some inquiries about the opening of this portal. I mean, I don't know what we can say. Just the question marks over the storage and whether that's a refundable cost. Just recap that for me so it's clear what we're asking, Gareth.
Yeah, so what we had to do was we had to clear a space at the back of our garden. Mm-hmm. We had to move our oil tank down the garden. There was also a cement pad the oil tank was sitting on. We had to rent a Kango to smash all that up. We had to level the area. We had to buy blocks at the cost of about 100 euro to level the area. This was all work. We spent 3 days at this. This was all work we had to do ourselves. Mm-hmm. We had the purchase of the shed, which was 4,000 euro. And we've had to buy storage boxes as well, which is about another 400 euro.
And in your head, you're setting that around about the 5K mark by the sounds of it, if not a bit more.
Roughly.
And you're being told that maybe that's not going to be covered.
And we're being told to, we've actually been told, Greg, to prepare an appeal. But then that's another issue because there is no way to appeal these decisions at the moment. So,
all right, okay, listen.
You know, we try our best.
All right, love and support to you and everyone. You know, we are kind of all in this together, and I think that's what we have to, the approach we have to have in this county. But listen, Gareth, thanks for, I know it's not easy to talk about either because you happen to face up to the realities, which sometimes we try and avoid to keep ourselves sane, but you can't with this crisis. It's just ever present. Gareth, thanks for your time. Take care of yourself.
Cheers, Greg.
All right, bye-bye, Gareth. Thanks very much. A caller says, and this is an interesting one, when a house is tested, how far apart should the test boreholes be? I was recently looking at a house to buy. The walls are full of cracks on the outside, but the three holes were drilled on the same wall and the test came back no mica. How is that right? Okay, yeah, I can understand the concerns there. I would imagine if it were me purchasing that property, I would want them in different locations, but I don't know what the rules are. But I know there are people listening that will know the answer to that like that, and they'll get in contact with us if you don't mind. So how far apart should the bore holes be, the test holes? Would you have your concerns if you were purchasing a property that had a lot of cracks and the three test sites were all on the same wall? 08660 25,000, which is the WhatsApp and text number. Now, as you would be aware, there's a story that we are covering extensively on this program because it's so important. And that is a change in the process of special education teacher allocation to primary schools across Ireland. It was set out in a circular issued earlier this year. Now, the concern being that, and it's not a concern actually, it's a fact stated by the minister with responsibility that a third of schools will lose set hours as they've been described. Marie Hurley is a mum and teacher and joins us on the programme now. Thank you. I beg your pardon. I'll come back to Marie. There's something else playing here in the background, which is my fault. Marie, can you hear me now, I wonder? Are you there?
Yes, Greg, I'm here.
Thank you so very much indeed. Right, okay. Marie, from your perspective, what do you see as the main problems, the main concerns here?
I think it's a dreadful situation, Greg. And I was just listening back to Emma, whom you had on last week, who's also a teacher and a mother of a little girl with complex needs like myself. And I'm just going to echo what she said in that this is going to pit children against each other, parents against each other and place schools and principals and decision makers at school level in a really, really difficult situation. My child has a recent diagnosis of rheumatoid arthritis on top of her Down syndrome diagnosis, which means that her motor skills, using her fingers and her ability to walk, are quite delayed and quite a challenge for her. Therefore, she also has complex needs of a different nature to those which Emma's child would have. But there are other children going to school who don't have Down syndrome, who also have complex needs. And our constitution and our morals and common decency would dictate that everybody in the year 2024 is entitled to an education, to meet them where they're at, and to bring them on to reach their full potential.
Marie, I don't want to ruin your flow there, but I mean, if you don't know or see, actually, children with complex needs, how can you assign the correct amount of set hours to any particular school if you don't see those people, if you don't count them, if you don't acknowledge them?
Well, your last word there is perfect. They are no longer being acknowledged. So therefore, this is the same as not accounting for them. This is the same as ignoring them. This is diluting the provision that helps them. And I think I would go as far as saying that this is going to create a two-tier system in school. Mm-hmm. Teachers will be left scratching their heads and wondering how they're going to provide for children who are now going to become, and I'm using finger quotes here, a problem, a challenge, a difficulty, mm-hmm. something they don't have adequate resources to deal with. Meanwhile, as Emma said, and as lots of people have been saying online and in real life, this is going to leave those children on the fringes,
yes.
who still have needs. They're going to be unprovided for, not provided for, not served either.
Marie, can I ask a question too?
Children from typical households, Greg, are yes. also going to miss out.
Yeah, of course. But say, for instance, Marie, like parents or guardians or a mix with a child with complex needs, additional needs, if they had them enrolled in a mainstream school for September, what are they thinking now? You know, or what is the school going to say to them now? Because before this most recent circular went out, there would have been a reasonable expectation that there would be enough set hours to cover their needs and the needs of other children. I'm just wondering, has this changed the position now for parents and guardians and schools who had children with complex needs enrolled for this coming September?
Absolutely. It has utterly changed the whole landscape for everyone who goes to school, and most particularly for those people who have a child with complex needs. I have a petition started online, Greg, to try and reverse this situation. And as a result of that, I have had so many messages from parents all over the country, many of them from people with children with complex needs who are terrified. Mm-hmm. And that's their word. That's the word that's coming up most often. They are terrified at the prospect of what September is going to bring.
But I think it's also important that it's not just the parents of children with complex needs. I think every parent has to take an interest in this.
And that's what I'm at pains to stress. And I'm so sorry to speak over you, Greg, but really this needs to be said too. Every child is going to be impacted, because I know if my little girl does not get the support she needs going forward, she is going to find school incredibly challenging. Mm-hmm. She's going to be more of a challenge in the classroom for her teacher, for the SNA, and for all of the other children. And that is going to upset the apple cart. And I, as a parent, do not want to be singling my child out as the reason for distress for everyone else in that room. That is utterly unacceptable. And that, to me, is putting her in a position that she should never be put in. If everybody's equal, if we value all children, if we cherish them, and if they're all entitled to their education, they should goddamn be getting it. Excuse my anger. This is really, really awful. And I don't think the ordinary parent out there understands that their child will also be impacted by this. And if every parent and every person who loves a child who goes to school, be it their niece, their nephew, their grandson, their granddaughter, their neighbour's child, everybody is going to feel the brunt of this cut. And in the middle of the circular, Greg, is a beautiful sentence that's very carefully worded. And if it was one or two words changed, it would be blatant discrimination against children with complex needs. It basically says that there are special schools and special classes, and many children with complex needs attend those schools. Now, I'm wondering, is there a next sentence that's missing, which says everyone with complex needs should go there, now because they're no longer going to be provided for in their local school. Now, that is crazy. There aren't enough places in special schools. There aren't enough special classes attached to mainstream schools to accommodate those children. And if we send them all to those schools, isn't that segregation? And utterly the opposite of inclusion. And I thought we were moving forward to a more inclusive society. Josepha Madigan was on the radio before Christmas talking about all the new special schools and saying that the NCSE, which is the National Council for Special Education, which is a wing of the Department for Education, Josepha Madigan said in her role as a minister for those with special needs that there would be provision for all these children in their local schools in the years to come. Now, obviously, she can't say it's going to happen in 10 years or whatever, but that that's their objective as a department. Well, how is that their objective if 2 months later, after she made that statement, Norma Foley comes out as a Minister for Education and cuts everything for children with complex needs?
Okay. Marie,
it's
listen,
ridiculous.
This is a story, obviously, that we're committed to following through on, and we appreciate your
Please
time.
Do, Greg, and thank you so much for all the coverage. And again, I'm so sorry for speaking over you. I
Not
really appreciate the opportunity.
No,
thank
voice,
you.
People hear my voice all the time. It's important that you're heard, and it's important the situation of your child and you and your family and all children are heard as well. And that's what we'll continue to do here. Thank you so much for your time.
Not at all. Thanks a million, Greg.
Bye-bye, Marie. That's Marie Hurley, mum and teacher as well. So how's that sort of double experience of that situation? Listen, we're going to get in contact with the local minister and the minister with responsibility, the education minister, to try and get interviews, as we will. We'll let you know how that goes, but that's what we're going to try and do and try and get answers as well.